This is the Human Rights 2020s podcast from the Human Rights Consortium Scotland. This podcast is all about how we promote and protect human rights in Scotland.
I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Casey McCall-Smith from the University of Edinburgh this morning, who is going to answer some questions for us around incorporation of human rights. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, three really simple questions. But we're going to start off with around human rights incorporation. So the Scottish Government have agreed to incorporate four more major international human rights treaties directly into Scots law. And we have already had the incorporation of the UNCRC on children's rights into Scots law. But when we talk about human rights incorporation, what are we talking about? What is that?
Okay, in the context of incorporation of international human rights law, incorporation is basically the first legal step towards enforceable human rights that will progress the implementation through direct application of the human rights that are set out in the international treaties, but it will make those treaties part of national law. Those rights that are embedded in those treaties, it will make them part and parcel of Scots law.
Okay, so it's actually bringing those international rights, but very much into Scotland's own law, as opposed to just at the international level. Okay, and why is that important then?
It's important because while Scots law and UK law more broadly recognize a number of the international human rights, they often do so in principle rather than as a direct enforceable right. And so incorporation means that the rights will be directly applicable in the national law and capable of being enforced through a judicial mechanism if necessary, and also further administrative mechanisms. So basically, incorporation puts a stronger duty on the state, including public authorities and all different agencies of the state, in that they will have to respect, protect, and fulfill the rights that they incorporate into Scots law.
Okay, well, that's really helpful. And so that means, and if they don't, ultimately that is where they can be enforced in court, you're saying. So individuals will be able to take cases.
Absolutely. So obviously, litigation is always the last resort because no one wants to go through the court system. However, the great point about incorporation is that there are many duties that would exist prior to a breach happening. So there is the obligation to take proactive measures or positive steps to ensure that a right is realized for every individual before you get to the point that there's a breach. It usually also opens up the door for things like much more consultation in advance of a law going into effect. That way, there's an opportunity to understand when the law as it exists now might not comply with the law as it's envisioned with that international human right recognized in the national law. So it opens up a lot more opportunities to think about rights and to force government to think about how they deliver rights and ensure them for all people.
Thank you. So are there examples of human rights incorporation here or overseas that we can draw on?
Absolutely. So probably most people don't realize that, in fact, the Human Rights Act of 1998 incorporated the European Convention on Human Rights. That convention is predominantly concerned with civil and political rights. So those rights that speak to how the state and an individual interact in many social and political settings. So that is one example of incorporation that is well rehearsed in the UK and here in Scotland, because it's something that the Scottish government has had responsibility for ensuring its implementation since devolution. So It's one of the really good examples and clear examples. The value of that act is that it very much helped us shape the incorporation, the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child incorporation bill, which was obviously adopted unanimously. And the great thing in terms of thinking forward about how Scotland goes about incorporating these other four treaties is that through the deliberations about the UNCRC incorporation bill, there was a lot of effort put into understanding how to maximize the current devolution settlement in order to ensure that people are able to optimize their rights here in Scotland, regardless of what happens in the rest of the UK, without exceeding the Scottish government's devolution competence.
And so there are different models of incorporation throughout the world, but the UNCRC bill took the model of full and direct incorporation. Why is that the best model that Scotland should adopt?
So full and direct incorporation is the best model because it is the clearest way to support the full complement of human rights that every individual is entitled to under the different conventions. I think it's important to understand that there's a lot of overlap between the international conventions, but the value we get out of having the different ones is that in certain circumstances, different groups who've possibly been historically marginalized might need to have a right considered in further detail. And that's why full and direct is important, because the wording of the conventions are important. The wording of these treaties give us the baseline levels for protection. Now, in terms of the Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights Covenant, so ICE-ESCR, those have, all of the rights that are in that that treaty carry a minimum core requirement. So there are minimum baseline standards that are required for the state to be compliant with its international obligations. So the hope is that through full and direct incorporation, those minimum baseline standards would be reflected in Scots law from the get-go. But there's the opportunity to progressively realize and make those protections much stronger for individuals here in Scotland. And so full and direct incorporation is important because, number one, we get the language of the international standards included into the national law, which makes it much easier to interpret it when we're talking about what are the outer limits of a right, what are the minimum standards. And so that offers up the opportunity to keep a constant watch on what happens at the international level so that we better understand how other countries are implementing the same rights. Because the whole idea about international human rights standards is that there is a basic minimum level of protection that every person is entitled to.
Well, thanks. So can you tell us, what is full and direct incorporation?
So full and direct incorporation essentially means taking that precise language that's set out in the international treaty and transposing that into national law. So verbatim, the treaty will become, those rights will become part of Scots law. And so it's exact language, and that makes it much easier to, compare like for like in terms of the national law and the international law. Another key point about full and direct incorporation is with full incorporation, you get the entire complement of rights, which I spoke about earlier. And that means that you get all of the individualized rights. But what's important in the context of the international framework conventions is that it's not just about the individual rights. It's about how those rights work together because they are interrelated and mutually dependent in most instances. You can't have the right to health without the right to food being delivered. You can't have the right to take part in political life if you don't have the right to education delivered. So the interrelationship between the rights is really important. And that is why full and direct incorporation is extremely important, because you get that entire working relationship of the rights included in the national law.
So if we have incorporation of these other human rights treaties in Scots law, when we have that, what will that lead to? What change will that bring? What's the next steps that happen in terms of rights in Scotland? Presumably it doesn't just stop at the law change. What would it lead to?
So full and direct incorporation, as we have often recognized, is just the first step. So it's the first legal step, but that will then encourage a multitude of different steps. And so that will mean that when we implement those rights, we need to think about implementation in all its various ways. So that would require government to consider how new policies and how existing policies interact with those rights and how they can better deliver. So it requires a lot of proactive thinking about how different policy ideas and new legislation might interact with these rights in advance of making changes, and ensuring that they make changes in the best way. It also means that in the context of engagement with public authorities, with the state, individuals will be able to point directly to those rights that are set out in the international treaty, but through direct incorporation in the national law, and say, you know, this is something that should be respected, protected, and fulfilled, and this is how it's not being done. And then we'll also have enforcement. And it's that those two initial stages, that thinking proactively about how individuals are impacted by the law, what their lived experience is, that proactive thinking will and should translate into a much better lived experience for individuals in Scotland. It should mean that they are able to better access their rights, to engage their rights, and actually express the freedom that those rights entail. So instead of feeling that they are intangible and have no relation to their daily lives, a lot of that proactive dimension is educating the entire population about what those rights mean, and educating those service providers through public authorities, et cetera, about how they can be better at doing their jobs in a rights forward way, so that everybody in Scotland grows together in their understanding of rights. And ultimately, that will mean that on the front end, we do much better with engaging rights and protecting and respecting rights, so that we don't have to go to that last resort of having them enforced or having some kind of recourse to remedy, even though that's the great stick that is necessary to ensure that the state actually does that proactive thinking at the outset.
That's really helpful, actually. So it's that that because you have the enforcement element, it that really encourages and creates a culture of rights-based decision making much early down the line. So it should improve how decisions are made, and presumably how people are involved in them and engaged, but also empowers individuals that when things go wrong, they know what their rights are and can use them to challenge that decision making where necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it does empower individuals. And I think education, in fact, all of the international treaties that are being that the government has said that they will incorporate, each of those has an obligation on the government to educate the public about what those treaties mean, what those rights mean for them. And I think what's important is that through incorporation, that makes it the government's obligation to actually deliver and to push that education and understanding and that culture change. And it's not just about culture change in the government, it's about culture change in society and about how society interacts and how people interact with one another. And, you know, I'm not saying that the government has to do it alone, because, you know, every civil society organization has a role to play, and every person has a role to play in creating a better, stronger human rights culture in Scotland. And, you know, human rights is positive for everyone. So it's important that all different parts of society work together and support the government and help understand and help create a better culture of understanding about human rights and why it's important. So, and I think international practice has demonstrated that those countries that have the strongest lived experience of human rights on the ground are those that have seen a multitude of people and organizations and the government working together in all its different facets in order to deliver and to promote and constantly grow this idea of human rights, because it's not something that there will ever be an end point to. It's, we're at the beginning, but the beginning will continue to go and to continue to evolve, because our rights are evolving, we are evolving as a society, and it's important that we continue that learning curve always. So we learn something new in terms of human rights every day, and that's important to keep that idea alive as we go forward with incorporating human rights here in Scotland.
I like that. It's that sense of actually this is a journey of human rights where we're continually progressing them and want to strengthen them and go forwards, and that human rights incorporation is absolutely the next step on that journey that we need to take. So thank you very much for your time. That's really helpful. I feel that we will come back to this in the future as well for further discussions and get into some of the detail. But thank you.
You're most welcome. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to the Human Rights 2020s podcast. For more information about our work as Scotland's civil society network for the protection and promotion of human rights, please visit our website at www.hrcscotland.org or follow us on Twitter at @hrcscotland. Thank you.